a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Welcome to Senate Commerce and Energy for the 2013 session. We have a lot of new people here today, and we've got a lot of good stuff ahead of us already this year. I've seen a few of the bills. So I'd like to welcome everyone who's present here today and everyone who's listening over the Internet. This is our first meeting, so we're not going to have any bills to tackle. That will start next week, but we are going to have an information session today and just bring everyone up to speed so that when next week, when we start tackling bills, we're going to be able to do it that much more effective and do the people's business that much better. So with that, I would like to remind everyone, please turn off your cell phones. This being commerce, we are going to charge a full dollar for every cell phone that goes off, and it will go to, let's say, the party of the Senate Commerce and Energy Commission at the end of the session. So with that, the secretary will call the roll.
Following senators, Vagalka.
Here.
Buell.
Here.
Jensen.
Here.
Johnston.
Here.
Maher.
Here.
Lederman.
Here.
Pauline.
Here.
There is a quorum.
There is a quorum. So next up is the approval of minutes, but we don't have any minutes from the previous meeting, so we will skip that point. And I just want to remind everyone who plans on testifying, please sign in at the back sheet so that we know who you are and we can keep track of that. With that, I will introduce Pamela Roberts, the Secretary of the Department of Labor and Regulation, and she's going to brief us about what her department is doing and just bring us up to speed. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, my name is Pam Roberts. I'm Secretary of the Department of Labor and Regulation. And thank you so much for allowing us to come and talk to you about our programs. We're really proud of the services that we deliver to the citizens of South Dakota. And I think once we go through, I have the entire executive team and then some other people that are going to be working with you on bills here today. So we have quite a crew. And as I go through my presentation, they'll all be introducing themselves, if that's all right with you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. The page has just handed out just a minor briefing, just so that you can follow along with where we're going. I was going to start my remarks just a little bit with what our mission statement is, and you can read it yourself, but our mission is really to promote economic opportunity and financial security for individuals and businesses through quality, responsive, and expert services, fair and equitable employment solutions, and safe and sound business practices. And we also are on the web at dlr.sd.gov. We have Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Pinterest accounts. So for those people in the listening audience, if you have any interest in following up or learning more about our programs, please feel free to get online and learn all about us. I wanted to just talk a little bit about where we've come in the last couple years, because today we're celebrating the second anniversary of the Department of Labor and Regulation. For many years prior to Governor Dugard, we were the Department of Labor, and our programs included many of the typical labor programs that you would, you know, think about: unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, labor and management issues like human rights and wage and hour and those types of things. And then also we have, you know, our local offices. They used to be called job service throughout the state. Those were typically, and it was a pretty big department before, because we have locations and permanent locations in 15 locations across the state and staff all over the state. But 2 years ago, Governor Dugard decided that he wanted to do a little reorganization, so he added some more regulatory programs to the department that included adding to our licensing boards and commissions, and then bringing over the Division of Banking, the Division of Insurance, and the Division of Securities to the department. So you'll see those three faces also in the room with us today. But 2 years, and we feel like the marriage is finally complete. We've adopted all the children, and I hopefully they've adopted us back. And you know, things are running really well. The first year was kind of dicey because we had some retirements of long-term division directors, and so we had some growing pains, but we feel like we've done a good job of getting through those. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just start introducing the executive team, starting with our secretariat. In the program that we call the secretariat, we have a lot of our service programs. So if you don't mind, I'll just have people stand there. They probably need to come up to the microphone and introduce themselves.
That would probably be proper.
Sounds good. And you guys can just follow along on the information I've handed out to you. So starting with Don.
Good
morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Dawn Dovery, and I'm the Public Affairs Director for the department. So what I assist with is department-wide communications, media relations, constituent services, legislative activity, and organizational development.
If I'm not around and any of you guys need anything from any of our programs, Dawn is the gal that we all go to. She's aware of everything on the legislative agenda. So just talk to Dawn on anything and she'll get you the right answers. And then we have legal. We have a new senior attorney that will also be lobbying a little bit. And I wanted Amber just to stand.
Amber Mulder with the legal. I'm the legal department.
So this, Amber, you did a little bit of lobbying last year. No, this was her first year. So we look forward to having her being very involved in the coming years. So this is her growing year. So help her as we continue through. Next we have Lyle Harder. And Lyle, maybe I'll just have them stand up and I'll introduce them just so you can see their face. Lyle does our administrative work. He is responsible for our budgeting, all of our accounting. We have, as I said, locations, so he does those kinds of first services statewide. So Lyle Harder, my jack of all trades. Been with the state many years. And next on the agenda is my Deputy Secretary, Marsha Holtman, and I do want her to come forward and talk.
You should pull a chair.
So gracefully. Good morning. I am Marsha Holtman, and as Secretary Roberts mentioned, I'm the Deputy Secretary and also the Director of Workforce Services for the Department of Labor and Regulation. And the programs within my division are very diverse, and you may be familiar with them on the local basis. One of the programs that you might know in your local communities is a mainstay, and that is our adult education and literacy programs that lead to the GED testing that is also administered by the Department of Labor and Regulation. Additionally, you've maybe heard recently about the National Career Readiness Certificate and a project that we're doing in many of your local school districts. We are currently testing 2,000 high school seniors this year, so that's a project that you may all be aware of as well. And if you've recently looked at long-term projections for what high demand and high wage jobs are going to be in the future, or if you've read something in the paper about the unemployment rate, that information most likely came from our Labor Market Information Center, which is part of my division housed in Aberdeen, and they do a lot of the data about workforce projections and what's happening in our state and local economies. Additionally, you might know personally one of the individuals that we've helped with training. We've had over 621 individuals that we've helped with tuition at a technical school or a university in the last year, and that's through our Workforce Investment Act. So that just gives you a little sampling of some of the many things that go on in our division. The name says it all, workforce training. Our primary goal is to help individuals have the skill sets that they need to fill the jobs of today and tomorrow. So, thank you.
Any questions of Marsha on any of those programs?
And I will say for the committee, since this is not a very strict meeting, if you have any questions, feel free to bring them up when they come to you, or you can also wait to the end. But feel free to interrupt if you would like, if a question comes to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our next program is Employment Services, and I'll have Mike Ryans just stand up and be recognized. And if you look on your, he's the Director of Field Services. Basically, it's our biggest division, 100 FTE? 186. So almost 200 people statewide that he is responsible for. And if you look at the map, these are the local offices that that we have. These are our permanent offices, and then we also have itinerant services that we deliver to several other cities statewide. But Mike and his staff really deliver a lot of the services that Marsha was talking to you about, and they also do all the job placement things, working with businesses to find employees and working with workers to try and find jobs. So thank you, Mike. Next is Pauline Heyer. And Pauline, I'm going to have you come forward too. And if you don't mind, I'd like you to just talk about your programs. I know this is off the top of your cuff, but this is Pauline Heyer, Unemployment Insurance.
Good morning. Pauline Heyer, Division of Unemployment Insurance. And I think most of you are familiar with what unemployment insurance does. And this year we will be bringing forth a bill that's going to tackle the trust fund program integrity.
Thank you.
Yes.
Senator Maher. I think it was a couple years ago we passed all this unemployment and stuff that came down with the stimulus package. Have we repealed those laws yet, or what's the plan with them? Or are we going to?
No, we haven't repealed any of those bills yet. I know the UI Advisory Council has been closely monitoring, you know, our trust fund balance and has talked about, you know, reviewing those bills.
And what's the time frame on that then?
We're actually having another meeting in February. We meet regularly, and in our report to the legislature, which hopefully you guys all got, otherwise you can access it on our website, but we did talk at length about, and there was really one bill that people had talked about. It was to pay for extended training benefits, an additional 26 weeks if you're in an approved training program. And there was some thought that, you know, after we got our stimulus money that maybe we would repeal that. As a council, I think unanimously recommend that we continue with that program and not delete it. It's very inexpensive. It, I think, is costing us about a couple hundred grand a year is all. And what that does is, in order to get that training, that additional unemployment benefit for an additional 26 weeks. As you remember, we pay for 26 weeks out of the state unemployment fund, 26 weeks of unemployment, and then your benefits cease unless there's a federal extension, and which there has been through the stimulus. But what the bill is that passed 2 years ago, in order for us to get $11 million of stimulus money, it mandated us to expand our training program and allow people in approved training to get an additional 26 weeks. Now, to be in an approved training program, it has to be something that, for instance, Marsha and her crew, and Mike and his crew, have gotten a dislocated worker or somebody that is really struggling to find a job that meets a lot of our income levels. They get them in the office. We have money to send them, say, to a one-year trade school. And so we're paying for that. They're on unemployment because they are a dislocated worker, say. They get unemployment for 26 weeks. What we found is that we have a big investment in those folks. After 26 weeks, if they don't continue to get that unemployment check, we've actually had people that have quit and we've lost our money on the training program because they don't have any income to continue. There are very few people that meet these requirements that are actually getting an unemployment check. They're in an approved program that we're paying for. And we just think it's a really good bang for the buck to continue that 26 weeks. So
have we spent all the federal money? Has all the $11 million been spent? And so the funding from the program is now coming out of the trust fund, the $100,000?
Correct. If you recall, we got $11.7 million. So obviously, this addition that we added, it will probably never use all of that $11.7 million. We used that to pay claims back during the recession. So, you know, it's a pooled, it's a blended pool. So whether you consider that it's all been spent or whatever, that money is, you know, like the money that we got in 2010 during the stimulus times, it was all spent on claims, but we continue to get new revenue in now, too.
And just a friendly reminder for Senator Maher caught himself and did the right thing, but for people testifying as well and answering questions, all questions and answers do go through the chair.
Thank you.
So just a friendly reminder on that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little bit further on the UI program, she has three programs. One of them is tax. So she has a group of folks statewide that assist businesses to pay appropriate taxes, and then we find new businesses and assist them to get lined up to be paying their unemployment tax. Then we have the benefits program. She has about 100 people statewide, but most of them are in Aberdeen, where we have one of our biggest offices. It used to be a U.S. Department of Labor program, and they built an office up in Aberdeen. So we have, you know, a big staff up out of that Aberdeen location. And her benefits program is all located there. There's a call center. Then she also has a program that does the accounting and goes out and does audits and stuff, too. So that's what her UI program is all about. Any other questions on UI? Again, that bill is a House bill. It'll be on its way over, and we'll talk more about it when it comes. Labor and management. James, I'll just have you stand up, too. This is James Marr. She's been a lawyer with us for many years and runs the labor management program. You can see on the responsibilities, you know, what they are, wage and hour, workers' comp, human rights. He is also the supervisor of the appeals lawyers, both in UI and workers' comp. Anything else you want to add? Okay. You might see him. He has those bills, but lots of times if there's other people bringing bills, then James will be here lobbying on behalf of those types of bills. Securities is next. So Mike Youngberg is our director of securities, and that's one of our new regulatory programs. We register and file securities and do compliance and investor education. So thanks, Mike. Division Insurance. I'm going to have Merle come forward because we're going to have, I think, six bills that you folks will be hearing in Senate Commerce. So I wanted him to introduce some of his staff and just explain a little bit about the program. I'll just let you sit down.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Merle Scheiber, the director with the Division of Insurance, Department of Labor and Regulation. I've been with the division approximately 7.5 years, and as Secretary Roberts did say, we do have approximately six bills that will go through the Commerce Committee. We have seven total, but six that will come through the Commerce Committees here. And Mr. Chairman and Vice Chair, we went through some of those yesterday. So we look forward to a robust discussion on a lot of those. Hopefully they're not too much or too contentious, and consent, you know, keep that in mind, if you will. But
just a friendly suggestion.
Just a suggestion. Yeah, right. It's just a suggestion, yeah. Not a reminder, though. With that, though, I'd like to introduce some of my staff. And I have a program here with the folks that with our contact information, so that you can contact us anytime when these bills come forward if you have any questions. So our email and our private cell phone numbers are on there. Deputy Director Randy Moses, many of you know him. He's been with the division, kind of the historical image of the Division of Insurance.
Good seeing everybody again. Thank you.
We have Josh Anderson, who is part of our legal team for the Department of Labor and Regulation, and you'll see a lot of him, too. Larry Dieter, he's the Assistant Director for the Property and Casualty Division. And then Melissa Clayman is unable to be with us today. She is the Assistant Director of the Life and Health Division. So I got everybody right? Okay. With that, I'd just like to congratulate Senator Beal. I believe you just got married. Congratulations. But with that, if you have any particular questions, I'll be happy to stand by. Thank you.
I'd also like to congratulate Senator Beal as the first contributor of the cell phone fund for the year. We'll see.
Yeah. Our last regulatory division is the Division of Banking, and Brett Aftal is having a staff retreat today and was not able to join us today. And I know, Mr. Chairman, that you had asked him to come and give a little bit of a briefing, and I did bring his monthly report and thought I would share just a couple of the comments since you had specifically asked for them. But under his emerging issues report to me this month was just the banking, the immediate concern about the ongoing drought. We just have a large, the banks have a kind of a lot, we have a lot of ag loans throughout the state. Our banks do a lot of agriculture loans. And so as farmers become stressed, so is the banking community. And so we're watching that very closely, and hopefully we'll get a lot of rain this spring and summer. We won't have to worry about that into the future. But that's just something that we're watching so that we don't get into a troubled banking environment. We actually are also watching the Farm Bill because that will impact our farming communities. And I thought I'd just read this to you. The division is almost out of the troubled bank environment, with just 10% of our state chartered institutions rated 3 or 4. Relief from reduced exam frequency burdens should be felt in 2013 and beyond. So when there's a problem bank, our staff has to go in and do more frequent examinations. So we see, I think 2 years ago when the economy was struggling, we had about 30% of our banks in that troubled category. So we're down to 10%. We feel really good about that. And I just talked to him a couple days ago, and he was talking about even further banks that are doing some more recovery. He felt very good about the that our banks are doing very well in South Dakota, too. And then we also have a lot of growth in our trust companies statewide. We have fewer banks. We have more locations of our state-chartered banks in South Dakota, but fewer fewer banks. I think we've gone down from like 65 down to about 53 over the last several years. But our trust companies have grown from about 10 to 63 over the last several years. So we're kind of doing some reallocation of resources there. And again, we're not losing banks. It's just there's some consolidations, and we're keeping those locations and things too. So I thought I'd just give you that report. If there's any questions, I could either try and answer them or have Brett come and talk to you later. But he does. We do have two bank bills that are going to health or to House State Affairs. The reason for that is one of them is their trust bill, which we have every year, and Representative Lust is the chairman of our trust task force, and so he helps a lot with that bill. And the other bill is and the other two bills are companions to those trust bill. Any questions on banking? If not, Dover, go ahead.
On banking, how has the department been implementing the Dodd-Frank bill that's passed? What's that done to your department?
And as we continue to implement, it's the banking community that's really feeling the stress from the Dodd-Frank regulations. They're going to have to be doing a lot more. And obviously, when we go in an audit, then we have to cover those programs. So it has been a big impact. If you want details, again, I could have Brett come talk to you. Okay. But yeah, Dodd-Frank has really impacted not only banking, but also insurance and securities in many ways. And, for instance, Director Aftal talked to me recently about the mortgage, the tightening up of the mortgage requirements statewide has really impacted small town South Dakota, that there's many small banks that cannot even get enough information on to be able to sell those mortgages out on the market. So it's a big problem.
That's kind of what I was going to hint at.
Okay, yeah.
I went there is because it is almost every small town bank in western South Dakota has ceased home lending now. And it's one of those things that we've identified in legislative planning is everything we come back to, it goes back to rural housing, and there's going to be a looming crisis on our hands if we can't attain affordable, any kind of home lending in rural South Dakota.
We have talked at length about that, and you just explained very well what our discussion has been about. So as we've talked what the Division of Banking's role might be, we struggle a little bit. We've talked a little bit about Farm Credit has kind of come in and filled that gap a little bit. And as you talk about it with some of the administrative leaders, they're like, well, if the consumers are being covered, maybe that's okay. But there's a lot of discussion with the banking community on that, too, whether or not they should. Obviously we would like them to be able to make those loans, but the Dodd-Frank is making it very difficult for them.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Madam Secretary, are you aware of any move to have a state bank of South Dakota, much like North Dakota has, and what are your thoughts on that?
Have not talked a lot about it. Have not. It's not something that we're pushing at all at this point. Okay. So any other questions? If not, then I'm just going to move on. You can see the boards and commissions that we have attached to our department. Abstractors, accountancy, barbers, cosmetologists, electrical commission, plumbing, board of technical professions, which includes engineers and landscape architects, and the real estate commission. And three of these commissions will be before you in the next few days talking about bills that we're bringing through Senate Commerce. So the chair and vice chair actually met with those executive directors yesterday, heard about the bills, and so we'll be able to help introduce them to you when they come to the committee during the bill testimony. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's basically the extent of my overview of the department. And if there's any questions of any of the people in the room, now would be a good time, or else I could maybe excuse my staff. If
is your party today for your two-year anniversary?
It is. Did you hear about it?
You were telling me about it last night.
Okay,
so
yes,
the staff is free to go. I think we're going to keep you for a little while from the party yet. So
okay. This executive team in the room basically fed about over 400 people this morning breakfast statewide to celebrate our two-year anniversary. We just thought it was a good time to kind of quit talking about the combined department because it's done and to celebrate that a little bit. So it's been kind of a fun day. And then we had we allowed blue jeans, which is kind of an odd, we only do that on Fridays typically, and if there's nothing going on, and as you can see, none of us were able to wear blue jeans today because we're in front of you, but out statewide, if people are listening, I hope they're enjoying their blue jean day.
Yeah, sorry to get you dressed up, but thanks for coming down.
Yeah, thank you. And then, Mr. Chairman, I can either be done, if you guys are ready for me to be done, or I could go over some of our economic information, that basically workforce stuff, if you would like me to.
I would like to hear about the labor force.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I'm just going to quickly go over our numbers here. As you can see, we have our actual labor force numbers, and what our labor force is, how it's counted, and it's all mandated by the federal government, how our Labor Market Information Center counts our labor force numbers. But we count the number of people employed, and then the number, and it's called unemployed, but it's kind of confusing for those lay people that don't work with this information a lot, because the 20,800 people that are counted as unemployed here are not getting an unemployment insurance benefit check. Necessarily. There's only about 2,000 people getting one right now. The 20,000 that is defined as unemployed under this statistic means that they're actively seeking work and have in the last month. So if you aren't working and haven't looked for a job in the last month, you would not be counted here. If you're employed, you'd be counted, and if you're actively seeking, you'd be counted. So the number is 446,000, and our unemployment rate right now is 4.7%. I think this was this September? No. The December number is 4.7, or is that the November number, Pauline? Okay, that was the overall. For purposes of this slide, I just did the overall rate for 2011, but I think our current rate is, what is it? 4.4. And it's notched down a little bit, but, you know, back in the 2008s, before we had the recession, we had 3.5 was a pretty average unemployment rate for us, and we're kind of, the last 18 months, we really stuck around 4.5%. And so we see that maybe we'll never get back down to that lowest rate, because there are some folks that are out there that are just might be looking for a job, but it's just they have a lot of barriers to get a job. And so we're concerned, especially in Sioux Falls, a lot of these in the bigger communities, a lot of these folks reside. And my manager just has explained to me that he thinks that it's probably going to stay up higher, just because a lot of the folks that are looking might not be able to actually hold a job. And so we have programs that are working with them to develop some of their skills or develop, a lot of it is just getting to work and being able to hold a job. So we work hard with that. What I wanted to show you...
Excuse me, Secretary.
Yes.
I think Senator Maher, did you have a question?
On the 20,000, mm-hmm. 840, obviously that's not including our reservations of the state.
It includes anybody on the reservation that is actively seeking a job. Now, there's a lot of folks on the reservation that would like to work but have not actively been seeking in the last month. So when we poll them, the question would be, have you actively looked for a job in the last month? And they would say no. So we call those discouraged workers.
And what's that rate of discouraged workers?
Because and we don't count that
don't
rate.
Count that.
And yeah, Bernie's not here. We get a grant from the federal government to do certain work, and that is not part of our grant to do that analysis.
The unemployment rate in Cheyenne River, and which is doing Zibaka, and then you hear the unemployment rate in Pine Ridge at 85 or 90%, and so I was just kind of curious, because we have such a low labor rate here, but yet on the reservations it's substantially higher.
And I don't, the numbers that you're talking about must be internal numbers that they're reporting, because, statewide and nationwide, these would be the reported numbers. You only count a person actively seeking as unemployed.
Senator Johnston had a question.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What assumption do you use for calculating full employment in South Dakota? Is that 4%, 3%?
That's a very good question. I kind of think we're there. We're at this point in the economy, we have such a demand for workers that we're getting close. I would say 4% has been something that we've used for years, that any lower than that, you're really in a demand economy. So, mm-hmm.
Madam Secretary, I actually have a question. Up in Watertown, one of the questions that I get a lot from business owners is they would love to hire, but they just can't find people. Is that what you're hearing around the state as well?
I really have heard that around the state, which is Basically, why Governor Dugard last year implemented his South Dakota WINS program, because he also had been hearing that statewide. And so, you know, get out on the website and look at those 20 points. But the department has been very involved in helping to establish those points, and we have our own programs that that build into his WINS program. But basically, that's as a result of hearing from business owners that they can't find qualified workers for jobs.
Senator Johnston.
Follow up to that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We've heard bits and pieces over both in the budget address in December and the State of the State on Tuesday in regards to the Dakota Roots Initiative. Mm-hmm. That's, what, 5 years old, six mm-hmm. years old now?
Yes. Yeah.
I haven't gone
through.
You
were very involved in developing that program, Senator.
Is there a report on Dakota Roots? Thank you. What page? 17, thank you.
Right. We are really excited about Dakota Roots. We've got some seed money, and it's really interesting to, you know, we've never really had, like, seed money to do anything with. So we got $100,000 through that WINS program last year of an appropriation one time, and then ongoing now we have $100,000 in our budget to do some marketing. And, I mean, if you want a further report, Mr. Chairman or Senator Johnston, I have Dawn here, and she could probably talk for a few minutes about Dakota Roots, because we have a lot of good information to share on that program.
For those who happen to be listening over the Internet, if you do not know what South Dakota Roots is, it's a program to try to lure people who have roots in South Dakota, possibly grew up here, and try to remind them about how great life is here and that there are economic opportunities to come back and either do your business or get hired by a business. So that's what that program is.
Thank you. Good job. And go to www.dakotaroots.com, and you can find anything that you need on that. I wanted to talk a little bit about our projections, because another thing besides the information that we get on labor force to establish an unemployment rate and the number of employed and unemployed in South Dakota, is we project about what our labor force needs are going to be down the road. And you can see that we're projecting that we're going to have a growth of about 6,000 jobs. And so when you talk about we already have a demand for labor, I'm starting to build the picture about where the demand for labor is, you know, what some of our issues are going to be in the coming years. So see that we're going to grow at 1.5%, and the jobs are going to grow. Our population is not going to grow, and our worker level, you know, we're hoping to, with all of our programs, to try to grow. So then going to the next page, and this is a different set of information that I wanted to share with you. For jobs in 2011, we had actually 467,000. And then labor force numbers, and this labor force number is 446,000. And that we got off that the first chart that I was showing you. So you can see that we have actually 20,000 more jobs than workers already in South Dakota. And you can explain that away a little bit with, you know, some people hold 2 to 3 jobs, and they're counted not as full-time jobs. It's like if you have a job, then you're counted in this number. So it's not a full-time equivalent. It's a job, and it's a worker. So these numbers, you can show that we have 20,000 more workers. Well, then when you look at our projections for jobs, that they're going to grow by 7.9%, because we have a really good economy in South Dakota, we have a good business community, things are growing. We are starting to boom again. We're projecting that we're going to grow jobs by 51,000 over the next 9 years, so in 2020. So you can see that gap is going to explain, you know, going to cause some more growing pains. I thought I'd quickly just go over some of our objectives to try and help with this workforce.
Excuse me, Madam Secretary.
Yes.
Senator Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question, Madam Secretary. Bless you.
It's
allergies. South Dakota ranks in the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a lot of pro-business environment categories.
Yes.
And across varying groups or organizations that measure that. The one that I recently read almost counteracts what your data shows as far as South Dakota's growth potential. Why would they think that way?
Do you remember who?
Looking at my friend in the back of the room, this president of the South Dakota Chamber, because he knows exactly what I'm talking about. If you don't mind, Mr. Chair.
I will grant leniency if you would like to come forward and...
He doesn't.
This is not unusual for the two of us to be doing a joint little dog here, so dog and pony here.
Please identify yourself.
Jimmy, get up.
Well, this is typical, too. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, David Owen, South Dakota Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Fortune magazine that released a study that showed that our growth potential was about 46. And when you drill down and look at that, it's based on an econometric model, and I can't even remember who developed it, but what's really weird is we score really well for our growth and gross domestic product and the other measures, employment and those types of things, historically. Then they turn around and use a different service for econometrics, it doesn't project that as far forward. And the other key element that we've never done well on, quite honestly, is there's a significant portion of that that's based on their perception of venture capital, the kind of venture capital firms you have, or the venture capital investments being made in South Dakota that are reported. And we've always struggled on that because we have a lot of businesses, but they're really tiny.
If I could expand just... Mr. Chairman, just a touch. If you took our analysis and then just, if I could talk about it from being on the ground with our local offices and what businesses are saying to us, I would say that our numbers, I think, are going to be pretty accurate because most businesses in South Dakota are poised to expand if they can get qualified workers to do that. Many of them are. So, right. So, our objectives would just to get more eligible workers from our core workforce into jobs. And that's that second slide where I talked about if you're not actively seeking a job, you're not going to be counted in that labor force statistics. So what this first objective would be to help business owners and to help the people of South Dakota understand that there are workers that if they're accommodated might come into the workforce. They're not actively seeking, they're not working right now, but say I'm a retired employee and the right opportunity came and the business owner was willing to work with me on the type of schedule that I wanted to have. Our disabled population, if we actually have some programs going to try and entice them more, you know, working with businesses to try and entice them into the workforce at a higher level. So we have a lot of different programs that we're working on to build that core workforce number from people that really aren't actively looking right now, but maybe have the potential to get into the workforce in South Dakota. And then number two would be to improve the skills of the unemployed and get them employed. And if you are getting an unemployment check in South Dakota, we are really working with you trying to get you back into the workforce. And that's what our number two is, that goal. Is. And then number three would be to recruit more people to our labor force, and those would be through Dakota Roots and some of the other programs that we're working hard on to try and bring people to South Dakota to fill those jobs.
Madam Secretary, I actually have a question. Mm-hmm. Does your department pay any attention to demographics as far as the number of births in the state? I know Senator Lederman and myself have done our job to try to grow the upcoming population of South Dakota, but I don't know, looking forward, because a lot of our workers are going to have to come from homegrown people. Do you pay any attention to that?
We do pay attention to that. We don't really have a federal contract to do that. The Census Bureau, you know, we use a lot of their information. So, yeah, we do model, and a lot of our projections are modeled off the demographic information that we get from the Census Bureau.
And what is that looking like? Is South Dakota, we're going down in births, so...
Right. You know, the number of people that are retirement age and older is growing. Our baby population is not. We've got a glut of people that are maybe around my age that'll be leaving the workforce, and there's not as many workers in the 20 to 35-year age bracket as we need to replenish jobs. And in the future, I mean, the number of kids going into school and things, I mean, that continues to exacerbate the problem.
Okay.
And then the last couple of slides I'll just quickly go over. Core workforce. Then we've... when you talk about the actual of 519,000, labor force of 446, we have 73,000 workers available but not seeking jobs. And then when you go to the 2020 projection, you can see that that's growing and the changes there. And then go on to the next slide, and I think that basically is where I get to the analysis that I wanted you to see. That bottom line, we have right now 52,500 more potential workers than jobs, and that projection we're seeing will grow by 23,000. So, again, just kind of explaining that the problem will continue to be exacerbated over the coming months. And then the next slide, number slide six, just shows a little bit, a snapshot about our job openings. And you can see that we had 9,800 positions listed in December of 2008, and in 2012, it's back up to 9,300. We dropped to a low of 5,500 in 2009. So you can just see what the economy has done and that it's basically popped back to almost pre-recession levels. We're happy with that. The next slide is very self-explanatory. It just talks about the industries that our workers are employed in South Dakota and the percent changes that we're projecting over the coming years. You can see where the growth industries are. Construction, financial activities, education and health services, businesses and professional services. And that gets us then to basically the occupations that we're targeting in the department. So when people come in to us and are looking for some skills training, we like to tell them to look at these occupations because we feel that they're high demand and high wage. On the left-hand side, the specialty trades, mechanics, sales reps, truck drivers, first-line supervisors, welders, those are all jobs that you can go into with some technical training. And then on the baccalaureate side is accounting and finance, nursing, teachers, IT, and engineers. If you get skills training, if you have the skills in these areas, we feel like you're going to have a good opportunity to get a good job here in South Dakota in those areas. And then declining occupations are in page 9. Examples are just basically jobs that are being eliminated because of automation. And then the conclusion on the last page is just, I'll let you read it, but it says, through 2020, jobs are projected to grow by 7.9%, but our core workforce and labor force is only expected to grow by 1.5%. If we don't take action to recruit workers, enhance skills, and engage all of the core workforce, we will be almost 52,000 workers short come 2020. And, Mr. Chairman, that's basically the end of my presentation on the economy. And
thank you. Does any questions from the committee members? Okay, thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. If you and your people would like to go, I feel free to go and get into your blue jeans, and thank you very much for coming, and thank you for the work that you do. I would like to invite, is it Mr. Everson? Is it? Am I pronouncing that right? Sorry. Everson. He's going to come up and give a very brief talk upon the bank franchise taxes and some of the volatility that we've seen over the last few years.
Very good. The page go.
Send him around.
Ben, would you? Got him.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commerce Committee. Kurt Everson. I'm the president and the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Bankers Association. We're a trade association that represents banks from large to small, from urban to rural, from credit card banks to traditional community banks across the state. What I have handed out to you this morning is serves as kind of a little bit of a guide for a teaching moment here. In my 10 years with the South Dakota Bankers Association, I don't think I've come before the legislature to discuss the issue of the franchise tax in all that period of time. So it's kind of, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Because of the financial crisis of, you know, the last decade and the effects that it's had on bank earnings, especially our banks that are in the credit card space who deal with customers all across the country, if you think about it, if a person loses their job or if their home's being foreclosed on because they're not making payments on their house because they've lost their job, one of the first bills that probably goes unpaid is the credit card bill. It's unsecured revolving credit. And so you've seen a diminishment in bank earnings during the last decade that is directly reflected in the taxes paid by the banks operating here and elsewhere across the country. We are the only industry in the state that pays a tax based on our net income. And it's been that way since 1939 when the franchise tax was first put in place. And so what you see in this chart that I've handed out is a reflection of just a few recent years of activity under the franchise tax. You know, things were pretty good. Going back in time a ways, prior to 1980, when Citibank chose to, at the invitation of the South Dakota legislature, bring their credit card operations to Sioux Falls, the state was collecting less than $1 million a year in franchise tax, something more about $500,000 a year. Almost immediately, once Citibank came and started their card operation, the state share of the franchise tax jumped to $10 million. Within another 5 years, it was doubled to $20 million. With another 5 years, it was at $30 million and has been in that $30 to $40 million range. And you can see, and I'm just talking about the state share now, you can see that the grand total of the franchise taxes that were paid to state and local government hit a peak of over $75 million back in fiscal year 2007. And so that's a substantial contribution by the banking industry to the treasuries of not just the state of South Dakota, but also the counties and the cities and the school districts where those banks operate. And then you can see with the housing market crashing in the middle of last decade, bank earnings declined and franchise tax collections hit their low point in fiscal year 2011 of $15 million in total, and the state share just about $5 million. So that's quite a fall, and I think that volatility in the tax collections has not gone unnoticed, obviously, by budgeting officials. And so there are some bills that have been introduced that deal with the franchise tax. And so while I don't intend to discuss any of those bills today, I just thought this would be a good moment to, you know, kind of give some background to the discussions that will come. And so I would just maybe touch on a couple things. Not only are the banks the only industry in the state that pay an income tax, some of our competitors do not. And I get legislators periodically who ask me, you know, do the credit unions pay the franchise tax? And the answer is no, they don't. And a follow-up question sometimes is, well, can we do anything about that as a legislature? And the answer is not directly. The Congress would have to authorize states like ours to collect a tax from those folks. They have a federal protection from taxation. Same goes for the Farm Credit System. They pay some tax. It's limited to the lending that they do that is not secured by real estate. So it's only an operating loan, it's not secured by real estate. And their effective tax burden is much, much lower than the banking industry's, so as a result of that. So anyway, with that as background, the last data that you'll see on the sheet, is just some demonstration, I guess, at a national level of what happened to bank earnings during the financial crisis in the wake of it. We were bumping along at 1.4% return on assets after taxes for a long time. You can see that in 2008 and 2009, we're barely nationally keeping our head above water, and there were, you know, a lot of banks that were not profitable during that period of time. Specifically, the credit card banks had big time difficulties during that period of time, and so again, that explains the volatility in the tax collections that you've seen across the state. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Senator Maher?
Did you have a question?
I guess I do.
Okay.
At prompting at my seatmate. Talk about, if you want, a little bit about the Frank Dodd bill. You were in here with the previous question. And
I was. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dodd-Frank, in the wake of what happened to the housing market, to the home lending market, Congress in 2009 and 2010 enacted two significant pieces of legislation, both of which have worked to diminish ongoing earnings of the banking industry. One of them is the Credit Card Act of 2009, which essentially put some pretty significant restrictions on the ability of banks to assess on an ongoing basis the credit risk if you're in the unsecured world, either specific to an individual borrower or generally because of economic conditions, rising unemployment and those kinds of things. And so what that caused then was a contraction of credit available in the marketplace, and it also diminished the ability of banks to earn money on their asset base. So there's that. That's a bill. And then the Dodd-Frank Act, the Financial Reform Act of 2010, it was a 2,000-page piece of legislation that is going to result in tens of thousands of pages of new regulations that the banking industry is going to have to internalize and comply with. And so that is an ongoing challenge. Frankly, it is what is prompting increased levels of consolidation in the industry, particularly as smaller banks that, the case in many community banks is, they've had a compliance officer that wore a whole bunch of other hats inside the bank. They probably wore three or four other hats. Their compliance, regulatory compliance, was not their only job. Now the world is complex enough to where banks are either having to find full-time compliance people or hire outside consultants, and both of those are expensive. Compliance people don't bring a dime into the door of the bank. The best they can hope to do is to avoid having the bank subject to some kind of regulatory sanctions and penalties as a result. But typically it just takes money off the bottom line, which, again, it's one of the reasons why I think the industry is going to have a hard time getting back to a rate of earnings at 1.3%, 1.4% return on assets. I think the new normal is going to be something significantly less than that, and so that's a challenge for us going forward.
Senator Johnston.
Kurt, and I look at you as kind of a compliment to Secretary Roberts and her discussion about the division of banking. It's my perception, living in Sioux Falls and out and about the community, that the financial services industry is again hiring, and both from a banking perspective and a credit card banking. Is my assumption true? And then as a follow-up to that, it's also my perception that the overall state of community banks in South Dakota is extremely strong. And I just like your opinion and perceptions and, fact right about that, those two matters.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to the first question, I think there are instances where, again, in the wake of the passage of the CARD Act and some other regulatory decisions that were either made in conjunction with that or independently of that, there was a significant contraction in the employment of some of our credit card banks, particularly those who are in the subprime or the non-prime area. I think there's more clarity right now today in 2013 in terms of the viability of the business model for some of those banks. And they went through a contraction. They closed down, in some cases, card processing centers and have built some staff back now that the path is a little bit clearer for them. There has been also probably don't know this, but South Dakota is now number one in the country in terms of banking assets that reside in banks chartered and based in South Dakota. We're bigger than Delaware, we're bigger than Ohio, we're bigger than North Carolina. And that is because, frankly, over the years, the legislature, this one and the ones prior, and governors, this one and prior, have sent a pretty clear message that South Dakota is a banking-friendly state. And so as a result, we have had in the last couple years, Citibank has consolidated their charter and moved the basis for that to Sioux Falls. So has Wells Fargo. So has TCF National Bank, which prior to just a year or two ago was a Twin Cities-based bank. And so all of their assets, if you go to the FDIC's website and look at the banking assets in South Dakota, you'll see that they're about $2.6, $2.7 trillion. Well, that puts us ahead of everybody else. And so when those things have occurred, banks who have chosen to cite us their charters here, they look at Sioux Falls and maybe other communities as potential places to grow their back office operations, centralized credit analysis functions, or other kind of servicing functions there. And so some of that's reflected in growth and employment too, Senator. So kind of a long answer to your question. In terms of your second question as to the health of the community banks, you heard Secretary Roberts say the number of banks that are under some kind of regulatory order or that may be a camel's 3, 4, or 5 rated bank, that the numbers of those have gone down. Banks, are trying to heal up from some of the poor performing loans that they ended up with prior to the financial crisis. I would concur with Secretary Roberts' view that the industry is very healthy. In fact, you can see one of the reasons I put the Kansas City region's return on assets numbers in this chart was those are reflective of the banks in South Dakota, and actually South Dakota's numbers are actually a little bit better than that. I just pulled some data down from the FDIC's website before I came this morning, and our ROAs are pretty sound. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have hiccups sometimes. I mean, and frankly, loan losses are part of the game. If you don't have a few loans go bad, perhaps you're not making as many loans as you should as a banker. So, it's risk, and there's risk in lending people money. You can do all the analysis you want. You hope they're going to pay you back. Their financials would indicate they can. Sometimes things happen and they don't.
Any further questions from the committee? Well, thank you very much for coming up. It's very interesting. I had invited quite a few people to come if they had wanted to introduce themselves or have anything that they wanted to say to the committee, this being our first introductory meeting. So if there is anyone who would like to come up and greet the committee and fill us in with anything that they're seeing, I'd be more than happy to do that. And I will just tell the committee that we will not go much further. We'll probably go another, we'll see how many people, but not a whole lot longer. But just identify yourself, please, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I'll give you a brief rundown. And I'm Andy Gerlach, the Secretary of Revenue, and I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing myself and some of my staff here today. Typically, revenue deals a lot with the taxation committees, but as I looked around the room today, both governmental, non-governmental, and industry, I saw partners that we deal with every day. So it was good for us to be here, and I think it's a good mix, and we have a little bit to add. But let me just talk a little bit about revenue, and then I'm going to turn it over to our lottery and gaming folks. The lottery has a bill that is a red tape review bill that's going to be before your committee today. So I think it's a good idea for you to have a baseline of the lottery and what they do. And then obviously the Deadwood Gaming is an industry that we work really closely with in South Dakota. But essentially what the Department of Revenue does is partner with our stakeholders to provide easy, fair, and reliable revenue administration that includes managing and regulating South Dakota's lottery and gaming industry. industries. We have a business tax division that deals very closely with the business community, a property and special tax division that deals very closely with local government. And then we also have a motor vehicle division that administers motor vehicle taxes, motor fuel taxes, vehicle titles, and registration. The lottery in 2012 celebrated its 25th year in South Dakota. We had an anniversary celebration this past fall. I think it's important to note that over the 25 years, the lottery has contributed $2.1 billion in revenue to the state of South Dakota. The majority of that goes to property tax relief. And as you go through the legislative session and talk budgetary issues, I would also note that the lottery is the second largest contributor to the state general fund behind sales and use tax. So those are some things that I think are important that people need to know about the lottery. Deadwood Gaming continues to be a popular source of entertainment that supports local government and tourism in the Northern Hills. It's a reliable source of revenue to Deadwood and the surrounding area. In this past year, we've seen excellent tourism numbers throughout the state, and that's transcended into more people going to Deadwood, and Deadwood gaming numbers have been good too. So really proud of that industry, and I give kudos to Senator Tom Nelson for some of the things he did last year during the legislative session to help that industry. Our department focuses in 2013 to foster and strengthen positive working relationships with the legislature, industry, and our state citizens. We have five goals in the department that as you deal with us, you'll see these interwoven in everything that we do. The first of which is to enhance technology, and we found the use of technology with our customers throughout the state of South Dakota has provided good transactions and interaction. Our second goal is to invest in our employees. You know, quite frankly, we need good players to have a good team. The third is to impact legislative and regulatory environments, and we do that by dealing with business, industry, and the legislature, provide information and analysis so we can make good policy. And I think you heard some things from Secretary Roberts and Mr. Everson, too. Some of the metrics that they track in terms of jobs, in terms of construction jobs, in terms of finance jobs, are metrics that we track also in the Department of Revenue. And I think some of their good efforts that we've seen over the past year have led to sales tax, use tax, contractors excise tax increases in revenue. So it all plays together, I think, with having a strong workforce, a good business economy, and then obviously we, from a tax collection perspective, it allows us to have monies that the legislature can use to fund government. So that is a very important goal of ours that we take seriously. Along the same lines, organizing and maintaining partnerships is one of our goals, and quite frankly, we need to know what's going on in the state of South Dakota and out there on the ground so we can do our job effectively. And finally, ensuring organizational learning, and we need to make sure that our staff understands the business environment and can provide the service that they need. So with that, that's a quick rundown of the Department of Revenue, and with me I have three of my staff, Norm Lingle, the lottery director, Clark Hepper, the deputy lottery director, and Larry Lassen, the executive director of the Commission on Gaming, and their great public servants and employees of the citizens of South Dakota. So with that, I would either answer any questions or I'll turn it over to Norm to give you some information on the lottery.
Any questions from the committee? Mr. Gerlach, I have one. How many people are in the Department of Revenue? How many employees?
250.
200.
We have seven offices across South Dakota, Pierre Aberdeen, Watertown, Mitchell, Yankton, Sioux Falls, Deadwood, and Rapid City.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Norm Lingle, Executive Director of the South Dakota Lottery. I'll try to give you a quick once around the world regarding lottery. As Secretary Gerlach mentioned, we just recently celebrated our 25th anniversary. The first scratch ticket was sold on September 30, 1987. And it's been very successful since that point. The lottery is headquartered here in Pierre. We have an office in Sioux Falls and Rapid City where tickets over $100 can be claimed, and we also have a sales rep that's based out of Aberdeen. We have a seven-member lottery commission. appointed by the governor that meets at least quarterly. The commission establishes the policy for the operation of the lottery and approves all major procurements. One of the things that I wanted to mention about the lottery commission is that in May of 2012, we held a strategic planning meeting for the lottery, with the primary focus being on video lottery. And as part of that, we did establish a mission statement specifically for the lottery that I'd like to read to you. And the mission statement goes, the lottery's mission is to work cooperatively with our partner licensees to promote and ensure the integrity, fairness, security, and honesty of lottery games, to maximize revenues for state programs and initiatives, and to ensure the lottery remains a viable and sustainable source of revenue and entertainment for the state of South Dakota. So that kind of gives us the direction and some of the background as we move forward at the lottery. I'll talk a little bit about each of the three lottery products that we do offer. The first is the instant ticket or scratch games. In fiscal year 12, the lottery launched 32 scratch games. Prices range from $1 up to $20. We have approximately 600 retailers across the state that sell the scratch tickets. Retailers receive a 5% selling commission, 1% for selling winning tickets over $100, and 1% cashing bonus for paying tickets under $100. Fiscal year 12, our sales were over $24.8 million, which generated a net proceed of $6.62 million that is transferred to the general fund. The proceeds from the instant tickets go to the general fund. On the online or lotto game, the lottery offers five lotto-style games. Four of those games draw on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and one game draws on Tuesdays and Fridays. The same retailers that sell scratch tickets also sell the lotto-style games. For fiscal year 12, we had a record year in sales of over $28.3 million, which resulted in net proceeds of $9.4 million. The way that the proceeds from the lotto-style games are distributed is the first $1.4 million goes to the general fund, with the remainder going to the capital construction fund. I'll touch on video lottery lastly here. The South Dakota Video Lottery Program was the first video lottery program in the nation, and so we have a lot of experience under our belt as it relates to video lottery. We currently have 9 licensed manufacturers who provide and sell terminals to roughly 140 licensed operators to place 9,100 machines in approximately 1,400 video lottery establishments across the state. Net machine income, which is cash in minus credits paid out, is split 50% to the machine owner, 49.5% goes to the property tax reduction fund, and then 0.5% is kept at the lottery to pay for our ongoing lottery expenses. For fiscal year 12, state share of net machine income was $87.8 million. This was the lowest net machine income state share since 1996. A couple things drove that. One was the economy, and two was the smoking ban that was implemented in November of 2010. I believe that we have bottomed out as far as the decline, and we are starting to work our way back. So far, to date, year over year, fiscal year over fiscal year, we are up close to 6% in net machine income. So we're starting to see some of that revenue growth come back. And then lastly, what I would like to mention, too, is that we do take responsible gaming seriously. It's included in all of our point-of-sale items, all of our advertising, and we also set aside $214,000 on a yearly basis that will be made available to the Department of Social Services to assist in treating folks with problem gambling needs. And with that, that concludes my remarks and would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Senator Maher.
In your strategic planning committee, when are we going to unlimited state gaming in Deadwood?
That would be a question for the person that will be following me, Mr. Elias.
Okay, all right.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Lingle.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Larry Elias, an executive secretary of the South Dakota Commission on Gaming. I've testified in a lot of committees, but I'll have to say today's the first day that I knew what one of the questions was going to be before I took the witness stand. The Commission on Gaming consists of five members appointed by the governor, similar to the Lottery Commission. Most of our focus is in Deadwood, as evidenced by the fact that we have 12 employees based in Deadwood and only two, including myself and Pierre. For the Deadwood casinos, we do background investigations of licensees who want to work there or own casinos. We approve the licenses. We audit and inspect the casinos for compliance with rules and payment of taxes. And we enforce those rules by hearings and imposing fines or in severe cases, revocation of licenses. We've got three main sources of revenue. There is a 1% tax on the gaming revenue. That was a fairly new tax passed in 2009. That was estimated to generate $1 million a year for the general fund, and so far those projections have been right on target. And since 1989, there's been an 8% tax on the gaming revenue, and by that I mean if you put a dollar in a slot machine and lose it, statistically 90 cents of that dollar is going to go to pay other customers who play that machine later in the day. The house keeps 10%, and that's what the 8% is taxed on. And then there's a $2,000 one-time-a-year device fee for every slot machine, blackjack table, and poker table. Most of that money, as the Secretary said, goes to local government. Last fiscal year, the city of Deadwood received $7.2 million from gaming revenue, and that is significant because in reading the local paper, the Deadwood City Commission adopted a budget of $16 million in 7.25% of that's coming from gaming revenue. The state general fund received $3.6 million, about $1 million of that in the directed tax and the $2.6 from the what I'll call the traditional taxes. South Dakota Tourism received $3.2 million, Lawrence County $805,000. The other municipalities in Lawrence County, except for Deadwood, received a total of $380,000. The school districts in Lawrence County received a total of $380,000. And if those school districts are in the state aid formula, then they have to offset from the state aid formula a dollar per dollar for any money they get from the gaming revenue. And then the Historical Preservation Fund receives $100,000 a year, and that's a statutory set amount that we transfer to the Historical Preservation, and they make loans to all over the state to maintain and improve historic structures, including, Mr. Chairman, the Goss Opera House in Watertown. We also are responsible for administering the gaming compacts with the eight tribes that we have. IGRA, the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, is a federal law that essentially says whatever the state allows in forms of gambling, the tribes within those states can have similar gaming. So our tribes are limited as the casinos in Deadwood to blackjack, poker, and slots. They can't have craps or roulette because nobody in Deadwood can play craps or roulette. When we started with $5 bet limits, the tribal casinos had to have a $5 bet limit. When we went to $100, they could go to $100. And now last year, when we went to $1,000, they can go to $1,000. We also inspect the tribes' casinos annually to make sure that they're proper payouts. And then in 1992, the Racing Commission was abolished, and those duties were transferred to the Gaming Commission. Primarily, that means we do have two small tracks at Fort Pierre and Aberdeen that run 3 weeks apiece in April and May. And then we do have now two. There used to be three. What we call OTBs or off-track betting locations where a person can walk in and bet on a horse race or a greyhound race that's running in California, New York, or Florida. Watch that race, and if they've got a winning ticket, they can get paid exactly the price as if they were sitting in the grandstand. Those are in North Sioux City and Rapid City, and we had one in Sioux Falls until it closed in October. And with that, I know you're, I think we'll run out of time, but I'll stand by for questions.
Someone better turn their microphone off. Are there any questions? I'm not sure if that classifies as a cell phone violation. We'll pull it. All those in favor of that being a violation of the cell phone ban, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Senator Bogalk is the second donor into the Senate Commerce and Energy Party Fund. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Thank you very much, Mr. Gerlach, Mr. Lingle, and Mr. Elias. I thought so. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Lyons, South Dakota Retailers Association. Nothing like being the last guy to speak right before lunch when you really didn't have a full agenda today, and I certainly don't want to interrupt Senator Bogalka's scanning of the news this morning. So, good to see you, sir, as always. I will be brief. Senator Holeen asked me just to come in and talk real briefly about some of our key issues and things that we've done in the past. While many of you are new to this committee, it's really good to see veteran faces be part of this process in terms of the Senate Commerce Committee. There are a number of issues that our organization gets involved in. Last session alone, just to give you a little bit of perspective, and not all of them went before this committee, but of all the bills that were introduced in the South Dakota legislature last year, our organization was involved in about 171 of them. Many of them did go through this committee. So I kind of wanted to give you a little bit of a list of some of those issues. But before I do, Senator Maher is a proud member of the Retailers Association. And so having those of you that have a business background and understand what it's like to run a business, Senator Bogalka is as well, it's good to have that perspective because, frankly, as many of you know, our members don't generally ask us to introduce a lot of legislation. In fact, we probably haven't had a bill that we've brought, I think, now for 2 years. But that all being said, we spend a lot of time playing defense in this process. So having individuals like you all that have a business background, we certainly appreciate that. The other thing I guess I would mention, going back to the governor's budget address in December and again in the State of the State on Tuesday, is the fact that our state's economy is running pretty strong right now. And I'd like to believe a lot of that is attributed to what's happening on Main Street throughout South Dakota. Clearly, the ag economy and our banking community are huge drivers in all of that. But when they're all doing well, that also means that Main Street's doing well. And I think if you look at the sales tax numbers and collections that we've seen over the last year and a half, clearly Main Street is doing its job to try to help support the state's economy and the important decisions that you all make up here. Now, that all being said, and many of the folks that spoke already this morning are individuals both in the state and the private sector that we partner with. But I just wanted to kind of run through a real quick list of issues that you may see before this committee and things that we've been involved with over the last couple of years. Liquor, alcohol issues, obviously at the top of the list. I think there may be a couple of bills not being brought by us, but I know at least one individual before me has one. And I would guess you'll probably see a few more. I think going back to Prohibition days, this body has a long history of liquor license issues, revocation, suspension, alcohol training, issues obviously relating with minors. And so our organization has had a proud history of working with the legislature in that area. Other issues include bad checks, billboards, the collection allowance, which I know Secretary Gerlach really likes a lot. Secretary, good to see you as always. Yeah, I know. Country of origin labeling, employer mandates, employment issues in general. Wages, unemployment, workers' compensation issues generally will go through this committee, at least it's been the case in the past, and so you'll see our organization be part of that. Employer mandates, pseudoephedrine, ephedrine laws, fuel, gift certificates and gift cards. A couple years ago, we dealt with legislation with regard to South Dakota's unclaimed property law and how we deal with gift cards in this state. Government competing with private enterprise. Health insurance, obviously, you've had a few of the insurance folks here already this morning, and obviously there can't be any issue that may be more paramount to small business right now than what Washington has done and what that impact is going to mean on Main Street. Lottery, that's already been discussed, but clearly we have a number of lottery retailers as members of our organization, and so we try to work very closely with Mr. Lingle and the department. Privacy issues, tobacco, the tourism tax, you'll see this session, I'm not sure if that goes before this committee or not, unfair trade practices, and then wages and workers' comp, as I mentioned before. I don't want to go into a lot of depth on all those issues unless you have specific questions, Mr. Chairman, but I wanted to give the committee at least a little bit of an overview that it's a very wide net. We have nearly 3,800 members that make up the South Dakota Retailers Association in a broad variety of business sectors, and in fact, we've always joked throughout the years that if you've got a bubblegum machine, you could be a member of the Retailers Association, and I think that's very true. We sometimes get spread in a lot of different areas, but hopefully we try to represent the small business community. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I actually do have a question.
Yes,
membership in the Retailers Association, I assume, is voluntary?
Absolutely.
And is it a fee that a business pays?
Sure. It'd be, Mr. Chairman, it's much like, I suppose, belonging to the state chamber or a local chamber of commerce, a little bit of, over our organization. We really have three primary reasons for existence. And in fact, I think the Retailers Association is the oldest retail association in the United States, and in fact, probably one of the oldest associations of any kind here in South Dakota. Our roots date back to 1897. But the three primary reasons for our existence is obviously advocacy up here, education for our members on a variety of different things that are coming down the pipe, whether it's trends, regulations, trade, and then, of course, membership services. So we have things such as health insurance programs, bank card processing, and other programs and services that our members need. But it is a voluntary annual membership, if you will, into the Retailers Association, but we act much like that of a local chamber of, or the state chamber.
A.K.A. the mob.
I mean, if we have people in Isabel.
Is that protection money? Disregard the comments from the respected senator from Sparky's Bar and Grill.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. Duly noted. Except that I don't know if he's paid his dues yet, so I have to be nice.
Any further questions from the committee? Thank you very
much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Look forward to working with you all.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Thiessen, and thank you for the opportunity. I don't remember in my 32 years of doing this when we've ever been afforded the opportunity to just get up and share some general information with the committee at the beginning of session. We've always seen that done for the state agencies, but not for the commercial side of these issues. One of my clients is State Farm Insurance. State Farm Insurance is a mutual company, and that's, I think, the point I thought I should get up here and discuss. We get so busy with the bills all the time, we rush into the issues, and sometimes we don't take enough time to discuss why we might be a little different. It's a mutual company, which means it is owned by the shareholder, by the people who buy insurance from us. So if you are an insured with State Farm, you are the company because it is owned by those folks who buy the product from us. Unlike a stock company, and that's why I'm sitting here today, because with AIG and all that's gone on in our world here in the last few years, you know, we want to make sure that as we look at issues that affect insurers and affect you as the insured, that we're not sometimes mistaking those companies for stock companies that are traded on the market, like AIG and other companies that have a different goal, that is to earn return and profits or dividends for their shareholders. So we're much different, and because of that, I thought I would take this brief opportunity to just point that out as issues go along. When State Farm, for example, in my 32 years of representing them, has discovered in a particular year that they have had a rate that was high enough on their auto, for example, that they had returns, they do a refund to the insureds. And I think in my 32 years, I've seen that happen at least three times where premium was returned to the insureds. You wouldn't see that in a stock company. That
would go to profits of the company and would, you know, go to be paid to those who hold shares of stock in that company, irrespective of whether they're an insured. So don't mean to belabor the point. I just thought that was this was an opportunity to talk about something that it is really kind of important, because it changes the issues we look at and how we look at them. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much. I think we have one more person who wants to just say hi.
Yeah, that'd be sure. Good morning, everybody. My name is Craig Mattson. I'm registered as a lobbyist for State Farm and also for the South Dakota Insurance Alliance. I think Dick gave you a pretty good background about State Farm, so I'm going to skip all that, and I'm sure you're pleased about that. But I also am the vice president of the South Dakota Insurance Alliance, who organization represents about 83% of the property and casualty riders in South Dakota. And it has domestic and foreign companies, size from State Farm down to the various very smallest farm mutuals. And surprisingly, we agree on just about most issues. We have some presence on the federal level and more presence on the state level. I believe most of you know Drew and Dennis Duncan. They are paid lobbyists for the South Dakota Insurance Alliance, and so that's how they become involved. And as I was sitting in the audience, I realized that I counted the 9 people sitting at the table and realized that I talked to 7 of them, including Amanda, about a guarantee fund bill, because I'm also the chairman of the South Dakota Property and Casualty Guarantee Fund. Since I've wasted your time other places, I won't do it here, but that is really a good organization, that consumer protection, and is an arm of state government that I'm pretty proud of. I am flattered that you gave us time, Mr. Chairman, to do this. I've never had this opportunity before. I think it speaks well of you. I just want to invite you all, if you ever have any questions that you think I can help answer, I'd be happy to do it. And if I can't find the answer, I'll look awful hard elsewhere to see what I can do for you. But thank you for the opportunity, and I enjoy working with all of you.
Any questions from committee?
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you. And I should... I guess apologize to the members of the committee. I realize that this was slightly unorthodox, but I do believe that by doing this with our first meeting, it's just going to make subsequent meetings go that much smoother and that much better. So that was my rationale for doing it, so thank you for that. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? With that said, I would thank the committee. I realize that the questions started dropping off precipitously about a half an hour ago when lunch started beckoning. With that, the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn. So moved by Senator Buell, seconded by Senator Jensen. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.